like completely without merit. Like, I think you could probably make a case for better integration, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, Tories aren't always wrong when they talk about building bridges. Boris Johnson, perhaps a notable exception with that. But I think the problem that they have is that they've spent like the last 8 years basically playing keeping up with the Farageans. And so now it's, you know, we're in a situation where are they really in the right position? Are they the right salesman, for want of a better word?
Well, I don't even know what they're selling, Aid. I honestly don't know what the message is. They need to find one. If the slightly delusional Conservative members walking around conference really believe they can win in 5 years, they need a message first. I'd really appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. These are the headlines at 5 o'clock.
There is nowhere in the Middle East Israel cannot reach. There's nowhere we will not go to protect our people.
There are reports that Israel has told the United States it intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon that could start as soon as today.
He said that while his spirit remains willing, his body is not.
The UK's most senior civil servant, Cabinet Secretary Simon Case, confirms he will stand down at the end of the year on health grounds.
The Met has apologised for missing multiple opportunities to sack him before he was arrested.
Four officers face disciplinary proceedings over alleged failures to investigate complaints against rapist police officer David Carrick. And
coal has been the backbone of power generation in the UK for nearly a century.
The UK's last remaining coal-fired power station has closed as Keir Starmer warns that taxes will have to increase if people don't agree to have more electricity pylons built. Sound like a fair deal? Talk more after the news.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 5 o'clock, an American official has confirmed Israel's notified the US it intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon. It could happen as soon as today, despite calls for an immediate ceasefire from Joe Biden. Sharon Lifshitz's father was taken hostage by Hamas in the October 7th attacks. She told LBC this will not help bring home the remaining hostages.
It takes away from the hostages, and if there's a ground incursion, they will all... They've been telling us that nothing will happen for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 5 weeks. Anything that take away the possibility of all the parties sitting together and reaching a deal does not help the hostages.
Four police officers and a staff member will face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with four allegations against the serial rapist while he was a serving officer. He was eventually arrested in October 2021 and jailed last February. Unite has branded thousands of job losses at one of the biggest steelworks in the world, industrial vandalism. After more than 100 years, the last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot shuts this evening. It's being replaced with an electric version, but that won't be up and running until 2028. Tory leadership hopeful Kemi Badenoch has told the party conference she will champion confident conservatism if she replaces Rishi Sunak. All four candidates are in Birmingham trying to drum up support from members ahead of the next round of voting in just over a week. Ms. Badenoch says the party needs to regroup to avoid another election drubbing.
We have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. When we knocked on doors, we kept hearing all sorts of different things. Some people saying, you're too left-wing. Other people saying, you're too right-wing. Some saying, you're too centrist. We were all over the place in terms of what we were doing. People didn't understand what we stood for. On top of that, we looked like we were squabbling amongst ourselves constantly. Nobody is going to vote for that.
The UK's top civil servants confirmed he will step down at the end of the year on health grounds. Cabinet Secretary Simon Case has been undergoing treatment for a neurological condition. There have been reports of tensions between Mr. Case and Sir Keir Starmer's Chief of Staff, Sue Gray, but he says that has nothing to do with his decision. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 83 points at 82.36. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight, drier with clear spells elsewhere and lows of 3 degrees. For tomorrow, staying cloudy and windy in the east, largely dry elsewhere with bright spells, highs of 17. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Jenny Barsby.
This is LBC. From Global, leading Britain's conversation with Tom Swarbrick.
4 minutes past five the time. Very good afternoon to you. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. This hour...
The National Coal Board has to manage. The National Coal Board has to close on economic pits. It always has.
40 years ago, Thatcher tried to close the coal pits. Today, she won. The final coal-fired power station left in the United Kingdom will be shut down later today amid the transition to renewable energy. The closure of Uniper-owned Ratcliffe-on-Soar power station in Nottinghamshire will bring an end to a 142-year history of burning fossil fuel to produce electricity. Today, Britain is the first G7 nation to end its use. This is the energy transition in action. Meanwhile, in Wales today...
It's a difficult pill to swallow to see the blast furnaces go off here and have to wait such a long time when we believe there was another alternative for the workers in the steelworks.
The last remaining blast furnace in Port Talbot will stop producing steel today, ending the traditional method of steelmaking in South Wales. Tata Steel expected to remove the last usable liquid iron from blast furnace 4 this afternoon while cutting 2,800 jobs in the process. This is the energy transition in action. It is a story then tinged with sadness, isn't it? The jobs lost, but the opportunity seized. This is progress red in tooth and claw, and Sir Keir Starmer has more of it for you, this time in the shape of pylons.
If we want cheaper electricity, we need new pylons overground. Otherwise, the burden on taxpayers is too much.
Hundreds and hundreds of pylons. Sir Keir Starmer, placing his government at the vanguard of this energy transition, is warning that opposition to the government's plans to build more pylons across the countryside would force him to put taxes up. The Prime Minister said burying new electricity cables underground costs much more money, which would have to be raised from taxpayers. He was speaking during a trip to New York. He said voters would have to accept trade-offs, including more development in return for better services. This as an enormous 112-mile snake of pylons is set to plough its way through Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex. 520 of them, each 164 feet tall, with new high-voltage electricity cables opposed by 26,000 residents. 26,000 people who stand in the way of progress. The same progress that shut the coal mines, turned off the coal-fired powered station, closed the furnace at Port Talbot and cost nearly 3,000 jobs. That progress that says you will pay for it if you oppose us. What do you think of that progress? This is the energy transition in action. Jobs cut, pylons up, opposition overcome to make energy greener and possibly maybe cheaper. Are you on board? They say a threefold increase in grid capacity is needed, which means tens of thousands of new pylons by 2035. Professor David Reiner is Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group. Thank you very much indeed for coming on, Professor. Today is the transition in action, isn't it?
Oh, it's quite a monumental day, particularly if we focus on the last coal plant shutting down. I mean, that is a remarkable achievement for the UK as the originator of the Industrial Revolution, to be the first, as you say, of the major industrial countries to have turned off its last coal plant. So that itself is quite an achievement, and reflects not just improvements on climate, but in terms of local health. I mean, it is a significant milestone.
A significant milestone which heralds a future of much greener electricity, but greener electricity brought to us by hundreds more pylons.
So, I mean, just to be very clear, this transition is not, it's not just today. Today is
very sure, yeah, obviously.
We've had, a remarkable, again, in terms of the UK being a leader, which we often claim to want it to be, in terms of offshore wind. The UK has, I think, maybe to the surprise of many, has managed to help drive down significantly the costs of offshore wind over the last decade. And that has been a genuine achievement, which has brought, clean electricity onto the UK power grid. Now, obviously, the nature of offshore wind means that we need to bring it to the demand centres. And those aren't all going to be on the Norfolk coast or the Suffolk coast. And so they need to come inland. And you do it, well, one way to do it is by pylons. I was just in, Denmark last week, and there are no pylons in Denmark. It's all undergrounded. That's a bit more expensive. It's not you know, I mean, again, it depends who you are. If maybe if you're a Dane, you're willing to pay that price. So those are, you know, these are real questions, real
yes.
trade-off.
Well, Keir Starmer clearly is suggesting that if you want it to be underground, you're going to have to pay more money via your taxes to cover off that expense.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, there's the cost of undergrounding has been coming down, but you know, we make these decisions. We chose to go offshore because there was local opposition to onshore wind.
Mm.
I mean, onshore wind, which the new government is supporting, is cheaper than offshore wind, right? But we've made a choice to pay a bit more for our electricity by sending it all offshore. Just the nature of putting it offshore means it's going to be more expensive. So, you know, these are trade-offs that we made, not just now with the pylons, but even in our decisions to have, you know, most of our wind offshore in the first place.
Do you think, when it comes to job losses, and we look at Port Talbot, these jobs that are being lost because of the closure of that furnace, what would you say to people who believe that this transition is going to be one that is pockmarked by job losses?
So inevitably, particularly in, you know, in certain towns that are really dependent on very energy and particularly very carbon intensive power, that inevitably comes with disruption. At the same time, you know, you can't ignore the fact that some of what's helping save jobs in the offshore industry is the offshore wind jobs, right? It's a big, you know, facility in Hull, for example, that, you know, that helps in terms of, you know, jobs and highly skilled jobs. In Port Talbot, again, it's a few years away, but they are talking about an electric arc furnace, again, with fewer employees. But they're not completely shutting it down the way,
no.
For example, in Teesside, the steel mill was shut.
So there will be jobs to replace the ones that are lost via the new technologies that are coming online. But to what extent, we don't know yet, because we're not quite there, as you say, because it's not happened yet. Professor David Reiner, Assistant Director of the University of Cambridge's Energy Policy Research Group. So we've made the decision the pylons have to go overground, because to put them underground would be more expensive. Rosie Pearson is planning environmental campaigner who is founder of the Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk Pylons Action Group. Sorry, Rosie, Keir Starmer says that I might have to pay more in tax to put these pylons underground, and I'm not willing to do it.
Well, I mean, it's hard to know where to start. There's so many myths floating around that actually demonstrate Starmer's ignorance. The first one is that it's not infrastructure. Grid infrastructure is not paid for by taxpayers. It's paid by bill payers. So that's one big sort of error in what he's saying. But actually, more importantly, is how to have a really, really good grid. And we've heard about how they do things on the continent. Look, we can have an offshore grid, an integrated offshore grid. The power is offshore. It needs to get to the major centres like London. It shouldn't be coming onshore in the first place, up in Norfolk and Suffolk. And an offshore grid saves money because you reduce infrastructure. Undergrounding, everyone says, is more expensive. They're talking about old style undergrounding called AC. If you do the new HVDC undergrounding, it is cheaper. And both National Grid say so in a different project from this one, and National Grid ESO says so. So there are ways of doing things which are cheaper. We're not in the way of progress. We support offshore wind. We want to see a great grid, not a sort of any old grid. And we need our leaders like Keir Starmer and Ed Miliband to stop talking about pylons and to look at the evidence for what actually works, what is less damaging for farmers, for communities, for the tourist business and for wildlife. So it's deeply frustrating for us to keep hearing that pylons are the only way. They're simply not.
You've got 520 of them coming your way. Do you know by when?
If they're built, they're due by about 2031, but we don't believe they should be built. We'll be taking it all the way through the courts, and we'll be fighting for these better alternatives, which can be built quicker. They are more popular, they are cheaper, and they are better for the environment. So there's simply no reason whatsoever to say that pylons are the only way to do things, because look at the rest of the world. They're choosing far better options.
Why
you need to upgrade the existing grid and double the transmission through the existing grid.
Why do you think they're doing it this way, and why do you think Keir Starmer is suggesting... Is he right to suggest that more money is going to have to be spent on putting these things underground, and we want to keep that money for other things, potentially?
No, I mean, it's either ignorant or there's some hidden agenda, because it is simply not the case that pylons are the cheapest way to do things. We've looked at the costings. The pylons are a lot more expensive than National Grid makes out. Undergrounding using HVDC modern cabling is cheaper than pylons, and two studies have shown that. So we need a proper conversation. We need the government to start to listen, to look at the evidence and say, let's look at other countries. They're doing things really well. We've got an offshore grid off Belgium. We've got HVDC undergrounding in Denmark and Germany. We've got America using these grid-enhancing technologies to upgrade their current grid before they building new infrastructure, and we seem to be the only people fixating on pylons.
What's the hidden agenda?
I literally have no idea. There's no reason to fixate on pylons. There's far better ways of doing things. So I think it can only come down to ignorance and refusal to listen. We're trying very much to engage with the powers that be, and they're stubbornly refusing to listen. But what it means is that the countryside is suffering, heritage is suffering, the landscapes are suffering, farmers will find the pylons a complete nightmare to farm around, tourist businesses that rely on the scenery will find it a complete nightmare, homeowners are suffering. So there's all sorts of impacts of pylons that Keir Starmer is ignoring, and it is cheaper to do it other ways.
Final question, Rosie. What are pylons made of?
Steel, which we think will be made in China and shipped in.
So I was going to say, that's quite a carbon-intensive industry, steel.
Steel and concrete. You've got concrete foundations, you've got all these steel pylons, you've got them moving around with all this equipment. If you underground it, you don't have that. You simply have a sort of ploughing machine that can lay them and the trenching. So you also need a motorway-grade haul road for the pylons. So there's so much damage caused by the construction. I think people think they simply waft in from the sky and they gently land in the ground and do no harm. We know that 1.8 million trees will come out in the route here.
Rosie, good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. Rosie Pearson, planning and environmental campaigner, founder of the Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk Pylons Action Group. These 112 miles of pylons opposed to now by some 26,000 residents, all of them, every man jack of them, standing in the way of progress, at least in part, according to the Prime Minister, who says, well, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to put more on your bills or pay more tax or whatever. That money's got to be found to put them underground somewhere. And that opposition will be overcome somehow. You're going to have to change your minds, because this is the progress. This is the energy transition in action. What say you? 03456060973. Calls after this. Tom Swarbrick here, 5:16. Headlines now. Jenny Barsby.
The US says it's been informed by Israel that it intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon as soon as tonight. Disciplinary proceedings are being brought against five people, four of them police officers, over the David Carrick case. And the Union Unite has branded the thousands of job losses at one of the biggest steelworks in the world, industrial vandalism. LBC weather, staying wet and windy in the east, drier with clear spells elsewhere, lows of 3 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm J. Louise Knight, and the anti-clockwise M25 is looking very busy this evening from junction 15, that's the M4, through to Staines at 13 because of debris on the road earlier. It started to improve anti-clockwise to Gosden at 6, though, through the roadworks where there was an accident earlier. There are long queues out of town on the A12 to the Lee interchange at Leighton. One lane's blocked with a broken down car. Just off the A3 at Esher Common, Copsham Lane, that's the A244, is partly blocked with an accident, so there are queues. Onto the tube, but just minor delays on the Bakerloo line, the Central line and the Northern and District lines. And on the trains, due to an earlier investigation, Thameslink and East Midlands have delays at St Pancras.
LBC.
Going to the shops isn't everyone's bag. Like Priya and Sarah here, in their front room trying to kickstart their two-woman band. They'd rather get easy prep meals, ingredients and more delivered by Tesco Whoosh while they practice. Store to door from as little as 20 minutes. Keep it up, girls. Tesco Whoosh. Every little helps. Fees apply. Delivery times range from 20 to 60 minutes. Selected areas only. Pricing specific to Whoosh. See tesco.com/whoosh.
Call Tom Swarbrick. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Right now, in communities across the UK, people like Flo are struggling.
I'm 11 years old. I'm a carer for my mum.
LBC's charity, Global's Make Some Noise, funds vital projects and offers assistance to those who need it most, including those that give young carers support and counselling.
You don't feel like you're alone as much anymore.
You can help change lives across the UK. Donate to Global's Make Some Noise and help people like Flo. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake, and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new, because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
You have 3 new messages.
Oh, it's Dad. Quick one. Don't forget to turn the heating off before going to Gran's. Don't want you getting home to shriveled plant babies. Totally forgot why I called. Spoke to Zara from St. James's Place about Gran's care. Moving her in is the best option for peace of mind and my pocket. Don't think the grab rails will match the decor, though. Love you, bye!
While you're looking out for the ones you love, our one-to-one financial advisors are looking out for you. St. James's Place. Invaluable advice.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats, order Kung Pao chicken with our watches, and, hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's energy savings account, Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
Leading Britain's conversation. Tom Swarbrick. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
5:20, the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. The day is one to celebrate. The final coal-fired power station in this country is closing. As of today, that's it. No more belching out those fumes and steam and all that stuff that gets poured into the atmosphere. It's done. It's over. The reliance on coal to produce energy in this country is finished. It's a big moment. As is the closure of the last remaining blast furnace at Port Talbot, particularly in that part of the world. 2,800 jobs going. That's a lot of jobs. As they close the blast furnace, the last usable liquid iron from Blast Furnace 4 will be used up this afternoon, and then they're moving to a what they say is a much more carbon-efficient electric model of creating the steel that may, 30% of it, may go to build some of the 112 miles of pylons that are needed to carry the electricity cables on which this new green electricity will be passed from home to home. But will go through the countryside of Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex. The Prime Minister saying, hey, folks, this is progress. Get on board or have a pylon built on your land. I don't know, because Ed Miliband, as we know, is the most powerful man in Britain right now. He's got such revolutionary zeal that he's going from field to field saying, yep, solar farm here, wind farm there, pylon over there. Nikki's a first-time caller in Aberdeenshire. Nikki.
Hi.
What do you make of Starmer's trade-off?
Oh, horrendous. You know, it seems to be a free-for-all. We live in Aberdeenshire. It's a free-for-all up here at the moment, with multiple proposals coming evident from various sources and companies that seem to all be jumping on the bandwagon to clearly make profit. There doesn't seem to be any consideration for communities. There doesn't seem to be a general overseer who is looking at all the proposals and putting together a consolidated map of what projects are going where.
That's Ed Miliband's job, isn't it?
Sorry?
That's Ed Miliband's job as the Secretary of State.
Well, if he's doing it, no one's seen one. And, you know, as the community that are affected, we should be able to see this information.
In what way are you affected, Nikki? You've got much cleaner, greener energy coming your way. That's a good thing. And cheaper bills, potentially.
We are directly affected. We will be getting a cable through our land that is going all the way down to Drax in Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah.
That's not stopping in our community at all. We won't see cheaper electricity prices. It's going directly to profits for many of these companies or overseas investors. You know, it's not as they purport that
it will be. The benefit, Nikki, is to all of us in many ways. Indeed. One, it's cheaper energy, and two, it's much, much greener. You're saving the climate. You're doing your bit for future generations. Come on, Nikki. You've got a cable, going underground on your land or above the ground?
No, we've got a cable going under our land.
Oh,
we have 6 acres. What's the worry? This is our home that we have saved and put all our savings into. They are coming to dig it up, but they haven't just staked a claim on 1 acre of our land. They have staked all bar 1 acre of our land. with an option for 10 years so that they can rock up when they fancy and come and dig up our home.
Do you own the land?
Yes.
And so what have they said to you about compensation?
Oh, well, it's insulting. Quite honestly, I could sell one of my ponies for more.
Go on then, how much is it?
I'm not going to say, because I can't. I'm under contractual, not allowed
to talk. So you've sold this land to have...
No, I haven't sold this land at all, no.
They've offered you compensation then in what way? Take it or leave it, we're building anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can't see the long-term merit in taking this short-term pain to get us into the energy transition?
As an individual project, absolutely. If they're coming to continually come and, you know, stake claim to our land, absolutely not. You know, at the end of the day, we will be living our lives on tenterhooks. I agree with green energy, but this isn't the way. Pylons will be shipped from abroad because we no longer make the steel with which to, you know, make those pylons. How green is that?
Well, in the short term,
I think cable is the way forward.
In the long term, very green.
And ruining the countryside, the communities, you know, the battery stations that are going to be put next to schools. You know, it's crazy. There is very little
what do you want to do? You'd rather have the cable built on someone else's land?
No, not at all.
You'd rather
I'm
not have the cable?
Happy. No, I think the cable should come, but there should be forethought.
But where's it going to go? If it's not your land or someone else's land, where are they putting the cable?
I don't object to a cable coming through our land.
Right, so what's the problem, Nikki?
The problem is how they're doing it and lack of communication with communities, with understanding what effects that is going to have on communities. They are saying that they are having public meetings. The public meetings are, for me, seem to be lip service to everything.
All right. Nikki, let us know how it goes. I'd be very interested. Thank you very much indeed for the call. Liam's in Horsham. Liam.
Hello.
Sir.
Yeah, so I'm just calling. I'm young person, so obviously I care about the environment a lot. It's going to affect me for quite some time.
Sir.
And I think this is fantastic. I think it's absolutely great. But it's the same thing we have again and again, where people push things off because of this and that, and we're no better off infrastructure in this country than we were 10, 15 years ago.
So push ahead, do it. Whoa. What?
Well, I don't necessarily think push ahead, whatever the consequences, but even to your last call this point, I think if the compensation and the method they're doing it is the problem, then perhaps we need to look at increasing the compensation, but not necessarily to the point that it bankrupts us either.
No.
You know, at the end of the day, this is going to cost billions.
You're absolutely right. It is going to cost tens and tens of billions of pounds to do all this. And as much as there are trade-offs, clearly there are trade-offs, I think what's less, perhaps, less immediately obvious, or certainly the politicians don't particularly want to talk about it, is that perhaps in the near future... there's going to be a cost, carbon cost, to doing all this, because the steel's got to be built for the pylons. The pylons have got to be put in the ground. The trees have got to be uprooted in order to do that. The fields have got to be built on. There's got to be tarmac laid down to get the truck. So, in a sense, it's going to be absolutely not carbon neutral to do this, but the prize is that for the next few hundred years, we've got carbon neutral energy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's... Personally, I feel that it would be better to bite that bullet now, given that everywhere else is going to increase the temperature of the planet. It's just going to keep increasing if we don't do something about it. It's better we do it now and do our part and then slow it down
to the people who are having the pylons built near to their homes or having cables put through their land compulsorily purchased at very little price, very low price, according to our last caller, you would say do your bit for the country, do your bit for the future.
Liam. Yeah, I think so. But also there's something to be said about doing this through councils. You know, so a big frustration is people seeing government money wasted. Rather than just say, here's a pot of money, we can just say, all right, well, because the council, you know, more people are going to be moving in, they're going to get more tax because the infrastructure is going to be there. We can think about lowering the tax that you pay for council tax or something. It doesn't have to be the cash value.
All right. Liam, thank you. Appreciate it. 03456060973, the number. Here's Mark on WhatsApp. Tom, I live in France, have two pylons on my land. The energy company come every other year and cut the trees to make sure all's well with the cable and the pylon. It really is an issue. Love the show and love to the family, says Mark. Meantime, Tony's on text. The UK will be the Wild West for green energy projects. Tom, I bet you electricity won't be cheaper, as you just stated. Lots of profits for overseas companies, not benefiting UK residents, says Tony. Come back to your calls on this in just a moment. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up.
I think that it is not something that must happen by a ground maneuver. I think it can be achieved by Hezbollah agreeing to a diplomatic deal.
Israel tells the United States it intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon, it's reported, which could start as soon as today. We're joined by a spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Force next. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. News headlines now. Jenny Barsby.
As you've just been hearing, an American official has confirmed that Israel's notified the US it intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon as soon as today. The UK government's again told British nationals to leave the country while commercial flights are still running. There could be a second IT scandal at the post office as a report has found another system was likely to have caused shortfalls. At least 40 former sub-postmasters say they were falsely accused of stealing because of the capture software. And the BBC has apologised to Amanda Abington over the mistreatment she received on Strictly Come Dancing. The broadcaster says it's upheld some but not all of the actress's complaints of bullying against former dancer Giovanni Panice. LBC weather, staying wet and windy in the east overnight. Clear elsewhere with lows of 3 degrees.
As the American election ramps up, vice presidential candidates J.D. Vance and Tim Walz prepare to go head-to-head in a TV debate. Join Nick Ferrari this Wednesday morning as he sits down with Sam Rosbottom from Betfair to discuss how the debate went and how it's affecting the betting market. That's this Wednesday, thanks to Betfair. Play responsibly. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. It's 5:31.
LBC This Morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Kemi Badenoch sparking a furious row yesterday for suggesting that statutory maternity pay is excessive. Lisa's in Rochester. Is that right? You're on maternity leave now, Lisa?
Yes,
oh, congratulations. How long ago did you have the baby?
Just on the 4 months. He's 4 months tomorrow. So I think the point that people tend to kind of forget when they're talking about maternity pay and mums kind of getting quote-unquote 3 months is we are literally creating the workforce that's going to be working in the next 20 to 30 years. So mums may now make a decision that, look, I can't afford to go on maternity pay or go on maternity leave. I can't afford to have children, which I think a lot of people are doing.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7.
With Betfair, where odds move faster than polls. Play responsibly.
LBC.
That was the bomb that still makes Kent jump. That keeps him awake at night. That he can't stop thinking about. That scares his wife. Upsets his kids, that ruined his life. The bomb exploded in Iraq 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. To find out more, go to combatstress.org.uk.
Hello, you. High energy bills that keep changing can leave you feeling powerless. At Uswitch, our energy experts are working hard to bring you lower prices, exclusive deals, and more choice. Fix your deal now and take the power back. Uswitch. We put you first.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak. And go see for yourself.
The Philly Cheesesteak is back at McDonald's. Two beef patties, crispy and grilled onions, cheddar cheese, all topped with a melted cheddar cheese sauce. What could be better? How about playing the Monopoly game with a Philly Cheesesteak too? Yes, please. until 15th of October from 11am. Participating UK restaurants. Subject to availability, 18 plus, app may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Tom Swarbrick. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
5:34 the time. Oh, how they laughed. Oh, how they scoffed. I told them it would be possible. They said no. But turns out I was right. It is possible to have a throbbing board of calls talking about pylons. Jane, Joseph, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. As we've been reporting throughout the show, though, US officials have reportedly told or been told by Israel that a ground invasion into Lebanon is imminent. Let's speak to Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, who is a spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces. Thank you very much, Steve, for coming on the program. Is the Washington Post right to say that Israeli special forces are now on the ground in Lebanon?
Tom, I think there are a lot of reports circulating. Of course, there's a we've had a lot of forces on the ground in the border area over the last few days. You've reported it, you've seen it. I want to be very cautious at drawing conclusions from incomplete information. From our perspective, we're continuing to strike Hezbollah wherever they are. And I would say we're doing it at three different levels. First of all, seeking out their senior leadership, the Hassan Nasrallah's and the successors that he's that are trying to come up forward. Secondly, I would say we're conducting extensive strikes against their strategic assets. So it would be surface-to-surface missiles, surface-to-air missiles that they have, coast-to-sea missiles, guided missiles, all of the advanced systems that they've accumulated over the last 20 years in order to fight a war against Israel. And finally, the third component is taking out the operators that are trying to conduct strikes, attack Israel, either cross-border attacks or even rocket attacks mm-hmm. against us. So I would say there's still a lot going on, and I don't want to jump to any conclusions.
So in answer to the question, is a ground invasion imminent, your answer is maybe.
Imminent is a means that it can happen any moment. And of course, the IDF defense chief was speaking to forces just last week on Wednesday, and he said, yeah, your boots could be in Lebanon within days. So I think we need to understand that the operations that are ongoing are focused in order to fulfill the government's instructions of restoring safety and security to permit the return of 60,000 Israelis mm-hmm. that have been evacuated from their homes for a year now. Now, Israel chose the path of diplomacy and for a year has been very patient, and that patience has now been lost. And so the idea is that we will create the terms and conditions so that Israelis can go home safely and securely. And so that that reality can be realized, we have a huge set of tools in our toolbox, including perhaps ground operations. We know that Hezbollah was planning to launch 7th of October strikes because in 2015 they published
Lieutenant Colonel, what needs to happen for Israel to say that they have won this operation, whether it's ground or just air, against Hezbollah? What does winning look like?
There are two ways. I think, first of all, the win will look like when 60,000 Israelis can go back to their homes. That will be a very distinct image of victory. I think that is the right thing to expect.
And how long might that take, potentially?
I mean, there are two different routes. I mean, there could be an extended war, which nobody has any interest over. And there could be the diplomatic effort. Now, ideally, and this is what we've been trying to achieve over the last year, United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701 from 2006 was supposed to ensure that there is no Hezbollah rockets, missiles, weapons in the south of Lebanon anyway. That failed. Under the umbrella and the watchful eye of the United Nations peacekeeping forces that were in the south of Lebanon.
That resolution, 1701, which you've referenced there, which Netanyahu referenced in his speech at the UN too, that's not legally binding, though, is it?
When you sign a ceasefire agreement or come to a ceasefire in the aftermath of a war, like the last war with Lebanon, and all parties agree on these terms and conditions, mm-hmm. there is an expectation that there should be no weapons right. in the south.
But it's not happens, legally binding. And I put it to you, Lieutenant Colonel, for a second, that it is the height of hypocrisy, some would argue, for Israel to be saying that Lebanon and Hezbollah should be abiding by a UN non-legally binding resolution, when Israel has ignored many UN Security Council resolutions which are legally binding.
Yeah, well, we can talk about those types of principles, but what we really need to understand is that if that United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701 would have been implemented, there would be no war. And now we are in a situation where 60,000 people have been evacuated now for a year, and while we have been trying to reinstate the 1701 rule under the assistance of the United States and France, that has not been realised. So I would say, yes, you wouldn't be happy about being evacuated from your home for a year, and you would demand that the government allows you to go home in safety and security. And so, why hasn't 1701 is a benchmark.
Yes. Okay.
Ultimately, what is required is that Hezbollah do not have the power to conduct a 7th of October type attack.
So why hasn't Israel abided by the UN's Security Council legally binding resolutions if it believes that the power of the UN should be upheld by countries that also signed to these agreements?
That's a good question, but I think at the moment what we're looking at is a war that we're talking about, which is almost every day now escalating.
And yes. I think if we need to it's very kind of you to think that it's a good question, Lieutenant Colonel. Would you have an attempt at trying to answer it?
Absolutely. We need to make sure that Hezbollah does not have that power to, as a terrorist organization, terrorize 60,000 Israelis on the border with Lebanon. We can do it either through negotiations or we can do it with military force. Currently, we're on the path of extensive military action and operation, and perhaps even with a ground operation, which we are planning for, because as a military, we need to have the tools in place if instructed to mobilise.
How targeted have Israel's military actions been if hundreds of people have died, including children, in Lebanon?
I think proportionality in warfare does not weigh on a number. Proportionality weighs on the military advantage, on distinction and precaution. And I would say with those three components, the IDF sets a very high standard. And of course, there is a tragic reality that there is a war that is ongoing, a war that Israel did not want, a war that on the 8th of October, Hezbollah decided to launch on Israel and the civilians and the people, the Israelis living in northern Israel. And now we are in a push to try and restore safety and security to northern Israel. That is the fundamental of the right to life and safety and security that Israelis deserve as well.
So the
and
children
we cannot
who die.
Let Hezbollah, we cannot let Hezbollah dictate that.
Yes.
And I'm sure you're not suggesting we don't defend ourselves because Hezbollah has chosen intentionally and as a strategy to position all of its assets from guided missiles to surface-to-coast missiles to its headquarters, its nerve centre, under civilian premises.
So the children that have died and will die as this war continues are collateral damage?
It is heartbreaking to put it in those simplistic terms, but do you think we should not fight for the resumption of 60,000 people to go home? I think it's a very, very tough question to answer. Of course, every single life lost in this war is a tragedy. And I would argue that every single life lost in this war, and especially as we push forward against Hezbollah, lies on the shoulders of Hezbollah that initiated, engaged and decided to launch a war on the civilians of northern Israel.
Thank you for coming on the programme. Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Forces. 5:42 is the time. Jane's in Derby to go back to pylons. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi, Tom. Good to talk to you.
And you.
I heard a lady a little while ago, she got a home on land that they owned. Now, it's about this... I've got no idea of this. I've just literally found out about it regarding pylons and underground for the electricity. And what our proposals were, we've put in for a barn conversion after 50 years of owning this land. We've finally got it through to the council. They told us that they would dig from the village up to the conversion, lay the pipes and everything, get gas and electric up there. And that's what we're going on. And now I don't know what this is. I've never heard of this till about 20 minutes ago.
The pylon bit?
Well, everything about it, because she mentioned underground, yeah. And she said she didn't want pylons.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on.
Well, Jane, are you being told that there are going to have to be pylons built on your land? You're just having a cable connected to your barn conversion on your 15 acres, is that right?
I've no idea. This is the first time I've heard of it. It's only me here, and I'm ringing you for you to explain to me what they're trying to do, the government wanting to do.
Okay, well, the government... Jane, thank you. The government is attempting to create clean electricity by 2030. And in order to do that, we're going to have to create many, many more, they say, onshore and offshore wind projects. Huge numbers of acres are going to be given over to solar farms. And in order to carry the electricity that is generated by all those thrumming new forms of energy creation, we're going to have a lot of energy pylons built across the countryside to carry that electricity around to the various points on the grid where it needs to go. So Keir Starmer says if you want clean, green electricity by that date, you're going to have to take pylons being built across nice bits of the countryside, including possibly, Jane, some of your land too.
Right, OK. So, and how are we starting that now? Is it something that's going to kick in pretty quick?
Yeah, we're going to do it now. It's going to start now. It's all these projects are being up for review. They're being taken to the Secretary of State, who is particularly overwhelmed with the opportunity that this all presents and is green-lighting a lot of it.
Right, and I don't know if you'll know this, but would it affect the land that isn't affected? Would it affect the horses that we've got on there? I mean, what I'm trying to say is, can they still feed off the grass once they've started this palaver?
So would the horses in your 15 acres be okay to continue to eat the grass underneath any new pylon being built?
Yeah. No, I don't mind.
I'm going to say yay rather than nay.
Okay. Yes, okay.
Is that all right?
Yes.
And have you had someone ask you about the pylons near your horse?
No, because we've only just submitted the plans to the council.
For the cable to go to your barn?
Yes. Well, I've been in touch with the electricity people about 2 years ago. And they said what we've got to do so that they could run the pipes up to the barn.
I think that's just, with respect, Jane, I think that's just an issue with your barn.
Oh, right.
I don't know that this plays into the wider energy transition that this country is trying to undertake. I think you're going to get the electricity going to your barn as agreed in the planning permission. The horses are okay. You have lovely gleaming lights coming into the barn in no time.
Okay, Tom. Thank you so much.
All right, Jane.
You just have a clue.
No,
thank
you're
you.
Very welcome. All right, all the best.
Thank Ta-ta. You.
Bye-bye. Serious programme, this. 5:46, headlines, Jenny Barsby.
Israel's defence minister has said the next stage in the war against Hezbollah will begin soon. 100 years of traditional steel making has now come to an end with the closure of the last blast furnace at Port Talbot. And Liz Truss has told the Tory party conference that the Conservatives would have fared much better at the general election if she'd still been leader. LBC weather, staying wet and windy in the east, dry with clear spells elsewhere, a low of 3 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm J-Louise Knight, and it's looking very slow on the anti-clockwise M25 this evening between junction 15, that's the M4, to 13 at Staines after some debris on the road earlier. If you're heading onto the North Circular, it's crawling northbound all the way from the Beckton roundabout at the A13 to the Ilford flyover where an obstruction is blocking one lane. Expect delays if you're heading out of town on the A12. A car's broken down at the Lee interchange in Leighton and just off the A3 at Esher Common. An accident's partly blocking the A244. That's Copsham Lane both ways and causing queues. Onto the tube, there are minor delays for the Bakerloo Central and District lines, and on the trains, Thameslink and East Midlands Railway have delays and cancellations at St Pancras.
Coming up at 6 on LBC Tonight with Andrew Marr.
Israel seems about to invade Lebanon. Militarily, they have done brilliantly. But what is the political and the human endgame?
Tonight with Andrew Marr on LBC.
Hello, I'm Bedroom. Remember me? I used to be your favorite room. The first room you wanted to show off to all your friends. Now I'm a mess, hidden from sight, covered in clothes. But all is not lost. An IKEA wardrobe, lamp and rug would turn this forgotten place back into your favorite space. Create the bedroom you have always dreamed of. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Call Tom Swarbrick, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats. Order Kung Pao Chicken with our watches. And, hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's Energy Savings Account Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
The British Airways end of summer sale has landed. Just as you're about to return to the chaos of weekday mornings. First gear for miles down the motorway. Piles of paperwork, quick or nothing dinners, commutes with no personal space. You deserve another break. Find thousands of flights and holidays in the British Airways end of summer sale. Subject to availability. Sale ends 1st of October. Holidays are atoll protected. Terms and conditions apply. Visit ba.com/sale.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's. Two beef patties, crispy and grilled onions, cheddar cheese. All topped with a melted cheddar cheese sauce. What could be better? How about playing the Monopoly game with a Philly cheese stack too? Yes, please.
Until 15th of October from 11 a.m. Participating UK restaurants. Subject to availability. 18 plus. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
All the big names are here. Ooh, who is that?
I think she was in the movie about that really big shark.
No, not her. The florist.
Oh, she's automating invoices on the go so she can spend more time on that flower wall.
QuickBooks can save you up to 8 hours a week so you could bring your vision to life. That's how you business differently. Intuit's QuickBooks.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
We've all been there. MOT's coming up, your car's making a noise or two. And you think if you just turn your music up just a little louder each time, you'll be fine. But that's not you, is it? You know you can get your car in check with parts that will fit right. All you need to do is enter your reg on eBay. Find brake lights, filters, windscreen wipers and more, and get your car MOT ready. Find the right part at the right price with eBay.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Tom Swarbrick.
5:51 is the time. Here's Paul on WhatsApp. Tom, regarding your last call, I'm planning on putting up a shed at the end of my garden that backs onto some fields. If I give you the postcode, can you tell me if I'll be able to stick an aerial in it, please? Ask Paul. Here's McDade. Tom, I'm converting my attic. Do I need pylons? Please explain. Oh, God. JVR, Tom, I've got a horse. Is it going to have to learn how to work a windmill? Joseph's in Stroud. Joseph.
Hi. That was great. And you know the best bit was just in your before your news article thing there. Liz Truss thought that the Tories would have done better if she was in charge. We are truly through the looking glass on this one.
It's going well.
We are on the other side here, guys. Yeah. So, I mean, this whole thing about pylons and wind turbines and all that kind of thing, we've only got so much capital, and we really are... You see, Germany and France and Ontario and Canada have very kindly demonstrated what happens when you try and do this whole thing in different ways. So Germany decided to go down the wind and solar route very heavily, and they ended up producing much more carbon and burned, you know, they're now currently burning lignite coal, gas prodigiously, and wood, virgin forest being chipped up, put in barges, shipped halfway across the world, and burned in power plants in order to pretend that it makes sense to put solar panels in Munster and wind turbines in Munich.
But hang on, hang on. So they're using all that energy to build those products?
No, they're using that energy to just keep the lights on.
But we don't need to... I mean, Joseph, today we have had the last coal-fired power station closed.
But we're still... but we're still burning wood. We've still got a wood-fired power plant.
We still need gas. Completely. And we're going to need gas for some time to come.
Not necessarily, because if you look at Ontario and you look at France... So Ontario, they went heavily nuclear back in the 90s in order to get away from coal because the American coal miners went on strike, and that really caused a... So they did it for an energy security thing. But the effect of that was that their CO2 production, their carbon emissions in the electricity sector just dropped right off a cliff. And then about 10 years ago, they elected the equivalent of the Labour Party, but they had also been captured by the Greens in their energy policy, who put up wind and solar. And all of a sudden, their carbon emissions started to go up because they tried to shut down the nuclear and push the wind and solar.
Well, I think you're right about... Sorry to cut you off, Joseph, but we've been here before. You're right about the nuclear. The small modular nuclear reactors are a really important part of the mix that's going to have to come in order to get net zero by 2050 and green electricity by 2030. I agree with you. But the trade-off is being made very clear by the Prime Minister. If you want cheaper energy, in this case, pylons are going to have to be built overhead on the countryside, huge amounts of steel required to build those things, but it will be better in the long run. Thank you for the call. Steve's in Dartford. Steve.
Yeah, one of the issues I have that nobody seems to be mentioning is we're building all these solar farms, which is taking up potential farmland. But I see loads of buildings being built with no solar panels on, whether they're industrial or domestic. So no one's putting solar panels on the roof, they're putting them in fields. So we fill up the fields with solar panels, we end up importing all our food from abroad, which is not particularly green. Regarding the pylons, again, they will be built on farmland and potential farmland, taking up space. There are alternatives to it, but no one's looking at the big picture. They're saying, oh, let's put loads of solar panels over there, but we're not going to worry about where the food comes from or how we grow it.
Well, I think I think people do worry about how the food's where the food is coming from. I think that's why the whole sort of rewilding effort of parts of the British countryside has been that there has been quite a bit of a backlash to that from farmers who say, "Well, I need this land to grow some food on." We're just going to have to do this, I think, really. Steve, thank you. Line's a bit dodge. Ferguson's the first time calling Basingstoke. Ferguson.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, good, sir. Thoughts on all this?
Sorry, I'm first time, quite a bit nervous.
Crack on.
Yeah, I was just saying to your colleague there that I do understand where the premise is coming from in terms of how it's going to cost everyone more by taking the option of undergrounding instead of the pylons option. And if you look at your two callers that called before, like for one from Aberdeen and one from Essex, it kind of shows you the problem we have that the caller from Aberdeen is receiving compensation, but they're not happy with that compensation. Who's going to pay for that compensation? It's us. So every compensation would be different for each and every customer, and that increases the cost of undergrounding any sort of electricity network. And I think the other bit as well that we forget is that I think the biggest investment that's ever happened in a national grid network was in the 60s. So we've got a lot of catching up to do compared to Europe. And I think the other caller was talking about, you know, HVDC and stuff like that's a whole different network, and that requires a large investment than we can actually currently afford at the moment. So, and I think it kind of stems from what the other caller was saying as well, that we made a decision to go offshore, and this is the solution for offshore wind, is to now bring it in using upgraded networks.
Because again, as our professor was pointing out at the start of this, Ferguson, if you make the decision to go offshore, that's absolutely fine. You can do that, but it's just going to cost you more to get the energy back onto the, into the ground and onto the grid. It just costs a bit more.
Yes.
So if you want to do this as cheaply as possible, ultimately, for taxpayers and bill payers, you're going to have to do quite a lot of it onshore.
Yes, but if you think right now, we've invested largely offshore, and to almost negate that investment is almost detrimental to the taxpayer and everyone else. So,
I don't know that it's negated. It's part of the mix still, I think, hopefully. Ferguson, appreciate it. Thank you. Sorry, short on time. I want to get to John in Fleet before we finish tonight. John?
Oh, hi there. I just wanted to comment on the offshore wind and how everyone's saying it's really green. But, you know, the current leases for the current wave of new offshore wind turbines is 60 years. But the actual lifespan of wind turbines is about 20.
Really?
You know, in the real world. And actually, before it's even creating any so-called green energy, you've got to recoup all the energy it took to both create the wind turbine,
exactly.
Wherever it was made, install it with thousands of tons of concrete.
You're absolutely right. That's why the near-term trade-off is that it's probably going to be a bit more energy-intensive to do this, but in the long run, it will work out, hopefully. John, I've got to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. If you missed any of today's classic, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player. You can also pause and rewind live radio there. Download it for free from the App Store or head to globalplayer.com. I've been Tom Swarbrick with you at 4 tomorrow. At 7 tonight, it's Ian Dale. Next, Andrew Marr.
Thanks, Tom. Israeli tanks have their engines running. Israeli special forces have crossed the Lebanese border. Hezbollah is also preparing for a ground war. So far, in purely military terms, the Israelis have performed brilliantly. But are they putting themselves in longer-term peril? As the Israeli Prime Minister makes an unusual direct appeal to Iranians, I'll be talking about that. Later on, I'll be talking as well about conservatives, about squirrels, and about two huge moments in our industrial history, when today the last blast furnace at Port Talbot in Wales and the last coal-fired power station in Britain in Nottinghamshire both closed. Are we walking towards a cleaner but colder country? All of that, plus a daring rescue in space. Join me after the news.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 6 o'clock. A spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces has refused to confirm to LBC whether Israel intends to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon.
Imminent is a means that it can happen any moment. And of course, the IDF defense chief was speaking to forces just last week on Wednesday. And he said, yeah, your boots could be in Lebanon within days. We have a huge set of tools in our toolbox, including perhaps ground operations.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner. His comments come after American media said Israel had notified the US it intends to go in as soon as tonight. Unite has branded the thousands of job losses at one of the biggest steelworks in the world industrial vandalism. After more than 100 years, the last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot shuts this evening. The UK's last remaining coal-fired power station near Nottingham is also closed today. The switch off at Ratcliffe-on-Soar brings an end to Britain's use of burning coal to produce energy. And the UK's top civil servant Simon Case has confirmed he'll step down at the end of the year on health grounds. There have been reports of tensions between Mr. Case and Sir Keir Starmer's Chief of Staff Sue Gray, but he says that has nothing to do with his decision. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 50 points at 82.70. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight, drier with clear spells elsewhere and lows of 3 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Jenny Barsby.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. It's 6 p.m. Now, tonight with Andrew Marr.
Good evening. All last week I was warning about the prospect of full-scale war in the Middle East, and today it seems to have started. After the explosive pager attacks and the assassination of the leader of Hezbollah,